Good morning, all you Pitt fans out there in POV land. This is Reed Kober coming to you from POV Studios in beautiful downtown Columbia, Maryland, where it's a sunny, beautiful day, fall day today. I wanted to wait a little bit before I put this podcast up. I usually do it like first thing in the morning when I wake up. But I wanted to wait a bit this time because, I wanted to process everything and not have any emotions. And I'm going to have emotions. You know, this is what I do. But I didn't want to have too many emotions as a hangover from yesterday's game. Although, I don't know why I would, because I knew that was going to happen yesterday, as I think 90% of the Pitt Nation knew we were going to get our asses handed to us. And we did, in a very dramatic and disparaging way. It was almost insulting in a lot of ways. The way they took their foot off the gas. I mean, I kind of didn't think UCF was going to stop scoring. I thought they were going to keep scoring because we were the only P5 team they played this year because their other game against the other game was canceled because of the hurricane. So we were their chance to open up the voters' eyes when it comes to playoff time. And I think they accomplished what they wanted to do, and that was a big win. Of course, it was. We know that it was 45-14, 31-point win, folks. Not as bad as Penn State earlier, but very disappointing. And I think what was most disappointing for me was that it was the penalties again. I think I have some pretty strong feelings about Pat Narduzzi as Pitt's head coach and his coaching staff. I don't have a whole lot of respect. I don't have a whole lot of respect for them professionally. Let's put it that way. I think we got them on the cheap, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing cheap production out of them. Well, the thing is that I thought we would have a pretty decent first half and then do our second half flop. And, you know what? We didn't have a decent first half, and we didn't have a very good first quarter at all. Let's just go. I guess what we'll do now is let's talk a little bit about the game itself. As you know, we were going up against one of the leading Heisman candidates in Milton as their quarterback, and then Adrian Killens as UCF's running back. And he had an interesting game, I thought. I thought he would have a lot more of a running impact. With Milton running and passing all over the place, I'm not going to say Killen was an afterthought. He wasn't, but he didn't have to have a huge day to get things done. But let's go back. That first quarter, at the end of the first quarter, the score was 14-7. We had gotten that punt return. The time of possession was almost equal at 7:32 for Pitt, 7:28 for UCF. But we only had two first down totals in that first quarter. They had 10. They had 2 on the ground, 6 passing. They were 3-for-5 in third down conversions. We were 1-for-4. And in the individual statistics, rushing, passing, whatever, we rushed 6 times for minus 1 yard. We were 4-for-8 passing for 61 yards. And actually, Pickett didn't start out too badly with that. No interceptions, no touchdowns there. And UCF had rushing 13 for 35. We were doing our job because our rushing defense we knew was kind of good going in, right? Pretty good, you know. He was 7 for 13 passing with 0 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, but 149 yards in the first quarter. Well, a little squib in the Post-Gazette from Brian Batko today, and I have it quoted here. He says, or maybe this is a trip, I'm not sure, I don't think I'm going to keep it up on the board here, but it says, given the special team provided all the points while the result was still in question, go ahead and take your pick for biggest letdown by the two touchdown underdogs. We're only underdogs by 13.5, I think we were getting 13.5 points, isn't that crazy? Visitors in their miserable first half. Running game, this is the first half now, a whopping 36 yards. Passing game, that would be 78 yards, but with a back-breaking interception. So he did, I'm sorry, Pickett did throw an interception. No touchdowns in that first half, first quarter. Penalties, Pitt struggled on the discipline front yet again, getting flagged 8 times for 92 yards in the first 30 minutes. Helping out a UCF team that needed none of it as it tried to replicate last year's undefeated season, the final tally, this is for Pitt, 11 penalties for 125 yards. Now, I just looked up something else. That was, if we had 11 penalties, which we did, we had 11 penalties for 125 yards. Against Penn State, we had 14 penalties for 116 yards. In 2 games this season, 2 out of 5 games so far, we both got our asses whooped in both those matches. And that's what I meant. 25 penalties for 241 yards. That, my friends, is a lack of coaching, a lack of discipline, and I think a lack of interest. I think that I'm not going to say the kids quit because I didn't see any quit out there. And that's a really subjective term anyway, whether the kids quit or not. You know, I mean, what do we expect them to do? Throw up their hands and, like, not try to play? That never happens. I've never seen that in a football, except maybe against West Virginia years ago. But I did sense a lack of disinterest in the second half from our kids. And that's too bad. And I think we're going to keep seeing it. I'm not going to say another trite phrase is Narduzzi has lost the team or a head coach has lost the team. I'm not sure what that means. But I think I would say that if you were in that locker room during the practices or in the kids' dorm rooms listening to them talk, these kids are not stupid. They know what's going on. They know the talent levels they have. They know the way they're being coached. They see Narduzzi and his staff. And you can see the frustration on Narduzzi's face when he talks. And, you know, in the beginning of the season, I thought he was an excuse maker. He's always been an excuse maker, really. But now it's just, it looks like he's just defeated. If you watch that 4.5-minute presser after the game, directly after the game, you look in his eyes, he's just looking around. He doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to answer any questions. And when he does answer questions, he either grimaces or shrugs his shoulders before he starts talking. He knows what's going on. He knows what kind of season he's going to have. And I think he knew it going in. I really believe that. I don't think that this is a surprise to the people around Pitt. At least the guys I've talked to. I know I've told you that I had a chance to talk to some people when I was up there for media, for the pro timing day. And that's when I was told this offensive line might be the worst we've ever had, which turned out not to be true. It's terrible pass blocking. Terrible. Which affects it. And if you can't pass block for your quarterback, it infects the rest of the offense completely. We didn't do that well running yesterday either. I mean, you know, we're opening some holes. That's what they do. But, you know, not when we play good teams, it doesn't. Really? Oh, well, we opened up holes against Penn State. So it's a really unbalanced effort. Not effort. It's an unbalanced result from the offensive line. And their weaknesses are killing the team. I think that's really their starting point. If you want to look at something, the starting point for this is the imbalance of the offensive line. Because Kenny Pickett, as, you know, nice a kid as he probably is, he can't do it on his own. And the expectations were way too high for him, guys. It was way too high for him. When I was reading that stuff, and I had written articles about it too and talked in other podcasts, about what Pat Narduzzi and Sean Watson were saying about Kenny Pickett. I mean, there's one thing in a leadership role. There's one thing that you want to... Well, of course, you praise in public and you criticize in private. But when you praise in public, you don't go overboard. You don't basically lie. Oh, he's so mature now. It's like night and day from last year. It's not night and day. It's 6 months later. You know? I know we're all a little bit surprised by the way Kenny Pickett's playing. But Don't you also think at the same time we really got our hopes up way too high after two games that he played where he didn't even throw a regular touchdown pass last year? In 66 passes, he only had one touchdown pass, and it was kind of a goofy little, one of the shovel passes to Aston coming in right across the middle. It was a trick play on a pass. He didn't have it in 66. Look, in a normal quarterback, you throw the ball 66 times, you're expected to have two or three touchdowns. But we're seeing he's not a touchdown machine. He has his faults. I had mentioned earlier when I saw him in practice 2 years ago, his deep ball's not good. And I wrote that. I said on the short and intermediate passes, his kid's got zing on the ball, and he's very accurate. But he's got happy feet. He's nervous back there, and you can see the nervousness. You can see it when he's on the sideline, when the TV cameras zone in on him. You sure could see it before the Penn State game when they showed that clip in the locker room where he was putting his jersey on. I'm not saying he looked scared, but he's nervous. Young kids, first real opportunity to take authority and responsibility on your shoulders, you better understand they're going to be nervous. And until he gets some major successes, it's going to be this way. They put way too much emphasis on him through the media, through the propaganda that we get because there's no open practices. Nobody knew how he was practicing. It might have been a little bit better, Pat, if we had some open practices and the sports writers could have seen how Kenny Pickett was doing. And look, nobody's going to go out there. In all the time I've been writing about Pitt football, I have not once read anyone, myself included, Chaz Dokish of the blogs, or any of the sports writers, or PSN, Mike Vukovan, Chris Peek, none of those guys have ever come out and assassinated a player's talents. If anything, they're going to be honest about it and say, hey, he missed some he missed some passes or whatever it was. But wouldn't it have been better if the Pitt fans and Kenny Pickett himself was understanding that there was work to do and that he wasn't doing that well? Now, all we heard about, he didn't throw an interception in practice, which is bullshit. That's crap. And it's another huge expectation. Why did Pat Narduzzi say that? Or Sean Watson, I believe, said that. Why would he possibly say that? Because now all the Pitt fans are thinking this kid doesn't throw interceptions. Well, we see that he does. He's throwing less than I thought he would. I have to be honest about that. He has 5 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. But then again, he's not standing up there flinging the ball either. He's running around. And more than half the time, he has to run around because he's getting pressured so much. And we saw it writ large yesterday, didn't we, guys? I mean, our offensive line, those guys were in there. And, UCF is a good team, but they're not, a top 25 defense by any means. They're not like one of these big powerhouse schools. They have a fantastic offense, and their defense is not bad. It's not terrible like ours. Ours is terrible. But they shouldn't have been pressuring Pickett like they were. Their defensive ends were in almost every play. Anyway, so let's get back to the game. Sorry, I went off on a tangent there. I just think we put way too many expectations on Kenny Pickett's head, and it's affecting him. He's 18, 19 years old, as it would. So yeah, the game stats from yesterday, we can talk about that, is really depressing. First downs alone, we only got 16. We got a lot in the second half. They took their foot off the gas. They had 31. Third down efficiencies, we were 6 for 13, not bad. They were 8 for 15. Fourth down efficiencies, 0 for 1, remember that? And they were 2 for 3. Total yards, 272. 272 yards we had yesterday. They had 568, which is lower than they usually have, I believe. 163 yards passing, again, most of that in the second half. 16 for 26, 1 interception, 1 TD for Pickett. 328. Wow, for Milton. Rushing, 109 on the game. 109 rushing. 240 for them. That rushing defense and rushing offense nationally ranked we were, that dropped like a freaking rock. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Penalties, we know, we just talked about that. Turnovers, we had one, they had none. Time of possession was actually pretty even again, 31 to 28, you know. Well, Olsen, he had 49 yards, 4.5 average. Darren Hall, 7 carries, 6.3. He had a long of 18. You know, Davis got in 5 times, ran 5 times, 3.8. Receiving, you know, Maurice French has turned into a good ball player. He's fun to watch. He might be the bright spot of the offense this year. The only bright spot. Greg, they usually use the tight end a couple times. He caught 3 passes. Sasir caught a pass. So Maurice French, of course, went on that 58-yard tear. Took him down to what the, you know, it was a touchdown run. I actually was in the car when that happened. So when I got to the place where I was going, I turned back to ESPN on my computer, on my phone, and I saw the replay. You know, our punter looked pretty good. How about that? He averaged 41. He finally averaged, he had decent kicks yesterday. And, you know, it didn't help us too much, but it helped us a little bit. But it made me feel a little bit better for going on. You know, by the way, let me just put this out right now. I don't think we're going to end up with 2 wins this year. We're going to win a couple more games. I firmly believe that. I wouldn't bet money on it. Not, we've looked like crap. We really looked parrot. We've looked bad. Worse than I thought we were going to be. And I was, you know, I was not excited about this season. I was pretty honest about my opinions of how I thought the team was going to be. They are worse, way worse than I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to win 5 games. I thought they were going to be competitive. They're not even competitive. Georgia Tech was a crap game. I mean, that was a that was a good win. It's the only really the only decent win we have. But they're not a good team. And that loss to North Carolina, I mean, you would look at the score and say 30-35 is competitive. They shouldn't even have been in the same stadium with us if, you know, everything you wanted to believe from the coaches and the local sports writers were true. We should have killed them. This is what gets me. I don't understand it. I don't understand the local sports writers, man. How could they be so freaking optimistic when we had the same exact personnel from last year, minus some really key players that were good for us? Don't get me started. Well, you can get me started with it. So, you know, of course, Lopes had that nice punt return, touchdown. That was 86 yards. That was a good one. He had some moves on that. I don't want to go into. I'm putting a lot of information up on the blog here for this. I have a drive chart by quarter, individual stats. Now let's talk about the stats on the year so far. Anyway, the bottom line. I want to get away from the UCF game. We know the final score was 45-14. It could have been a lot worse. I think they really let up. They were running the ball to run out the clock. I need to talk about this. I was disgusted, horrified, when Patrick Jones faked that injury. You know, some jocks out there might say, oh, what are you worried about? It's like everyone does it. Everyone cheats. No, not everyone cheats. Not everyone has to cheat or should cheat. That's cheating. It was blatant. He was looking directly at the sideline coach. He was looking directly at the sideline. And then just, it was just, he's not even a good actor. It was ridiculous. And that the UCF lineman was standing up there clapping like this. Like, oh my, like good, you know, good act. It was embarrassing. And I felt embarrassed for the university. I really did. Whoever that coach was on the sidelines, I'd pull his ass into an office right away and say, you know what, you're about to get shit canned out of here. Excuse my language. I'd fire the guy. I would. I'd fire him. Something like that happened on my watch. Anyway, that was just icing on the cake. I mean, all that going on the field, I can understand poor plays. I can understand bad penalties. You know, I can understand kids not playing up to their abilities, if they even have abilities. What I can't stand is a blatant disrespect. Unsportsmanlike. It was poor sportsmanship to do that, and cheating. And I, man, I mean, if I was the athletic director, I'd take a hard look at Pat Narduzzi and say, is this what you want to have happen? I'd ask him right off the bat, if you condone this, then you're gone. You know, to me, winning football games isn't that important. It's not as important as doing the right thing. So, you know, let's talk about the season of the kids so far, how they played. Now, as I just said, and I had written many times, I was literally dumbfounded by how many people thought this team was going to be really good. And, you know, when I write these articles for the POV, I don't just go ahead and sit down and start typing. I do a lot of research. I do a lot of, you know, looking at comparisons. And what has this person done lately? And what is he capable of doing? How was he recruited? You know how I feel about our recruiting. I think it's the worst. I think it's terrible. Forget about whatever the, the class rankings are. That's all crap. These kids are not, half the kids shouldn't be in D1 roster. I believe that. I don't think the talent level's very good at all. We haven't seen anybody hit anywhere close to stardom in 4 years. God, that's amazing. Anyway, there was a couple things in the preseason, in the offseason, in the preseason, that I had like jotted down on a big whiteboard. I have a whiteboard next to me. And with question marks next to him. And I said, Kenny Pickett was one. You know, why all the hype? You know, why all? I mean, people were literally saying he was going to be like Danny Marino. You know, he's going to play like Danny Marino. He's not playing like Sunseri or Vojtech. He'll get better. I think he will. But and the other key point was people were calling, I mean, the local pundits and most of the Pitt fans, especially on the POV, were calling for 8, 9, 10 wins. I couldn't see that. Now, I try to take a critical eye in the real sense of the word, and I try to suspend my feelings and thoughts when I try to figure out what other people are seeing that I might not be seeing. And everything that I turned to really kind of try to understand led me to think it was a crappy year. There was not one thing that I thought was going to stand out. Now, I thought our running game was going to be pretty strong because we have some pretty talented running backs. I mean, they're not good. They're not great. But they're pretty talented. They're like 4.5, 5.0 yards per carry running backs. But we don't have a breakaway running back. We haven't had one for years. None of them under Narduzzi. And our quarterback is a young kid. I didn't think he was going to be a superstar. I thought he might play well. I had said many times I thought he was going to be like Peterman's first year, which was, I think, around 16 touchdowns, around 10 interceptions. He still could get there. But that's not superstardom. That's pretty darn good for a kid's first year. I hope he gets there. Because that means we might win a game or two. But the offensive line I knew was going to be bad. I don't think the tight ends are any good at all. And our wide receivers. You know, people go crazy on Tasir Mack. And he's made some great catches, don't get me wrong. But these kids are doing what they're supposed to do. It's like, let me digress for a second and go to defense. Ike and I, you know, we know Ike, our great friend on here. I've gone back and forth about Quentin Virginis. What sticks in my mind about Quentin Virginis is why the hell couldn't he unseat a below-average middle linebacker in Mack Galambos? Forget about Galambos going to the NFL. They take kids in the NFL for a lot of different reasons. Mack Galambos was not somebody at Pitt that couldn't be sat down and benched. He could have easily been benched had there been someone to play in his place. But the reason Quentin Virginis, with all his physical talents, wasn't getting to that starting job is because he couldn't handle the football intelligence part of the game. And it's so obvious that he still can't. It's so obvious. And, you know, you look at this and you say, well, he's had X amount of sacks, and he's done this. He made 9 tackles this game. He's leading the team in tackles. Like, that doesn't mean anything. He's leading the team on tackles on a crappy defense. If somebody has got to lead the team in something, this is the nature of the beast in sports. It's statistics. Somebody is going to lead the team in receiving, yards after the catch, you know, sacks, tackles for loss, penalty, whatever it is. Somebody's going to be rated from 1 to X. And Virginis happens to be the leading tackler because somebody has to be the leading tackler. But he's playing, I think he's terrible. Now, he'll get in there and he'll make a great play every once in a while, which you expect your kids to do. And I'm not going to take those good plays away. He's exciting to watch when he can actually get it together. And I hope I'm not, I don't mean to sound too harsh on the kid. When I say football intelligence, that doesn't mean I'm calling him a dumbass in life or anything like that. He might have a 4.0 average. I don't know. He seems like a nice kid. I know his dad, actually. I mean, the family, I worked with him when I was in the Coast Guard. They owned the Gateway Clipper fleet. I wrote policy that their ships fell under for the Coast Guard. So I met the guy. You know, it's a cool family. But really, if you watch him, and I have recorded every game, and I go back, and because if I'm going to criticize somebody, I need to know that I'm doing it honestly and for a good reason. And he takes the wrong angles. He takes the wrong first step all the time. He's easily blocked. You know, look at the big plays that UCF had yesterday and that Penn State had. He's arm blocked by wide receivers sometimes or tight ends. It's not like they're getting there and putting their body on him. They're arm blocking him, and he just, it's like they just move him aside. But really, the thing that gets me as a middle linebacker is that he's not able to see what's happening in front of him. And I have no idea who's calling the defense out on the field. I have no idea who's doing that, but whoever's doing it, either the information's coming in bad from the sidelines, probably wrong schemes, probably wrong play calls. But whoever's doing it is having a tough time. Especially when you substitute that much. Of course, he doesn't change his base defense. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, he's such a stubborn head coach, man. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get how someone can be 56 years old and have come up through the ranks and worked with guys that, you know, I've always told guys that work for me, younger kids, there's two different types of role models in life. There's the positive role models and the negative role models. And the negative role models are just as important to learn how not to be or what not to do. And I don't get how he can be in coaching for 30-some years and not understand you have to be flexible. You have to be flexible. And this is what, and this is, okay, well, off of Pat Narduzzi for now. Let's get back to the kids. So Pickett, you know, that's what I wanted to say that about Virginis, because he's a key player on the defense, and I think it's his play is so hot and cold, up and down, that it really affects the rest of the team on defense. All right, so on offense, let's go back to offense. For the season now, 5 games in, we are a little bit over a third of the way, right, in our regular season, because I don't see us going to a bowl game. So far, Pickett he has a good completion rate of 62.3, but his yards per attempt is only 6.9. Now, I'm going to pull my calculator out here. He has 743 yards divided by 76 completions. And his completion average, yards per completion, is very low at 9.7, very low. An average quarterback's up around 12.5. Nate Peterman in 2016 was at 16.1 or 16.3 yards per completion. His is 9.7 because he has a short game, and because he's panicking, and he is, and because he's rolling out sometimes too fast, too quick, I should say, or early is a better descriptor. He's cutting in the field in half. We know that when a quarterback rolls out, he cuts that field in half for himself. And then he's not able to go. I don't think he's mature enough as a football player to be able to go through his progressions, his checkdowns. So what he's doing is he's throwing almost literally to the shortest receiver he has. And we've seen him go short when right in the level above, 10 yards above that, we'll have a free running wide receiver, wide open. And he hasn't been able to see him because he's locking in. That's what quarterbacks do. I mean, this is kind of what I expected him to do. This is what a kid in his first season, and that was Pat Narduzzi made one good point after the game in his video conference. He said, this is in essence his rookie year, his freshman year, and it really is. Now, it was nice that he had those two games, and what that probably helped him with most wasn't so much playing those games, but that he was going to be the number one quarterback. He was QB1 all through the spring and all through the fall, so he got all the QB1 reps, which has, I'm sure, helped him. Because if he had to split reps with a viable number two contender, then he wouldn't have been near even as ready as he is now. But, you know, there's something going on with him above his shoulders, and I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying. He's a young kid with way too much pressure on him, and it's kind of showing. Now, he has more touchdowns than interceptions, but his QB rating is a poor 120. Put that in perspective, again, going back to Peterman. Now, Peterman was kind of a special case. I believe he was one of the best quarterbacks Pitt's ever had. His was 163 point something, way up there. I think he was in the top 10 nationally that year. Sunseri's was always around 140 or 138 or something like that. Vojtek's was around 135. I could look that up, and I will some other time. But at 120, it's not very good. It's not good. Now, our running game, Olsen's averaging 5.9. Hall's averaging 6.7. Hall has 404 yards, so I guess he's on track for 1,000. Kind of makes you wonder where he was last year, right? Talked about that before. Pickett is our third leading rusher. He's only averaging 2.5 yards every time he carries the ball. 2.5, man. And that's taken into account the sacks and the called plays. He's not running the way we hoped he would. He's been able to get those first downs, though, with his legs, which helps a lot. But it's kind of almost too little too late in a lot of ways. I don't think Pitt's, the offensive coordinator, Narduzzi, Watson Narduzzi, I think aren't sure what they have, what kind of animal they have in Kenny Pickett yet. Is he going to be a running quarterback? If he is, then you have to change your offense. You have to get quicker guys on the offensive line that can pull out in front of him. Or is he going to be a pocket quarterback? I think he should be a pocket quarterback that runs every once in a while. But right now, you're making him two things. He's like a hybrid out there, and that's a lot for a kid to handle. So his rushing has not been what we expected. He has two touchdowns. That's good. Matches what he had last year. Davis is a little bit, he's played 4.3. He has 103 yards on 24. Okay, Aston's not doing that. He's only got one carry. Why are we not giving the fullback the ball every once in a while? Receiving, Mack is a nice addition. He was a good addition. He's averaging 22 with a long of 60. That's really very good. 12 receptions, 265 yards. Doesn't have a touchdown yet. Now, Lopes, I think, let's see. Our receivers are only averaging 9.8. Well, I just said this. 9.8 yards per reception. Very low for a receiving core. Lopes, who was our leading as far as number of receptions last year, he has 11. He's one behind Mack. 103 yards. He's only at 9.4. He had a 44-yarder for TD. He scored two TDs. Aston, 10 for 5.8. 10 receptions. Greg now has 3. Matthews has 2. Where were those receivers that everyone was screaming about, thinking that we got this great receiving core in the recruiting classes? We don't even see Tipton. We don't see anybody. Tipton has two catches. Aaron Matthews has 2 catches. Where the hell are they? Well, to get transfers in, that's what they have to do. Butler Jenkins, it's nice to see him out there. He's 4 for 12 yards. So, you know, if you're not passing well, you're not catching well. That's just the bottom line. So that's pretty interesting. Now, I'm going to take a quick break here. I'm going to pause for a second. Hey, one of the reasons I took that break is I quit smoking on September 4th, anticipation of my surgery on the 8th of October. So I'm puffing on like an e-cigarette, so I didn't want to do that when I was talking. Anyway, I just pulled up the defensive stats, so let's look at this. As I said, Virginis is leading the team with 33 tackles. I think he had 99 last year, if I remember. Oh, sorry about that. Hold on. That was my bookie. He wants his money. I put a C note on Pitt to win. No, that was my daughter. Okay. Anyway, so we're talking about defense now. Quentin Virginis. 33, 6 tackles for loss and 2 sacks. He's a leader in those categories. And like I said, makes these plays every once in a while. Looks good doing it. Second is our leader from last year, Aduwu. He's got 25. He's got 5 tackles for loss. Let me see. I'm going to skip down here to the totals. We only have 9 sacks on the year. Wow. 9 sacks on the year. I think that's more than last year, though. And 32 tackles for loss. No one's jumping out at me defensively here. Weaver, 22 tackles. He's got 5 tackles for loss and 1 sack. Keyshawn Camp has 2 sacks, 2 tackles for loss. Shane Roy, 6 tackles. 12 total, actually. 1.5 tackle for loss. No sacks. You know how I feel about him. Actually, we've seen Twyman in there more. That's good, I think. So, anyway, you know, the other kids have been playing. Reynolds has been playing. Bryson Gardner's been playing. Dane Jackson, he's getting beat a lot. I'll tell you what, and I guess to go back to the middle linebacker spot, I honest to God would put Brightwell back in. I think Brightwell played a steadier game last year than Virginis is playing this year. I know people and the Pitt fans were really high on Virginis. I know the staff was really high on him. I had my doubts about it, as I said earlier. I think that he's given up a lot of big plays. He's given up a lot. And with this defense, the big plays have been killing us. So Brightwell seems to me steadier in there. I think he's smarter, and I think he has better instincts. I think he has better instincts. Virginis is like a real, kind of like the image of you would want your linebacker to be as far as physicality goes. And that physical talent. He's very good at that. He's not that great at playing middle linebacker, in my opinion. So that's the defense. It's terrible. You know, I think we know what we're doing so far is overall in all the games. I want to talk about national rankings because I think these are kind of interesting. First of all, it gives you at a glance what your team is doing compared to the other D1 teams. I wish I could winnow them down to Power 5 teams, but I can't. The NCAA doesn't allow you to do that. So I'd like to see how we are doing as opposed to everyone else in the Power 5 teams. But you'll see on the blog, what I did is I cut and pasted the national rankings, all the stats, the rank that we are, and the value. And so, like, for instance, passing offense, our rank is 118th out of 129, and we're averaging 151 yards per game, which is very low. So I put them in, I colorized them. I put all the ones that we were in the lower 25%, which is basically 97th and above, which is bad in this, you know, in this term. I put those in red. And then the mid 50% I left in black. And then the upper 25%, the things that we're doing well in, or should be doing well in, and that would land us in the upper 25% of the D1 teams, we don't have any. We're not one statistical category are we in the top 25%. I think we were in rushing. We were very close to it in rushing. That dropped like a rock. So after 5 games, what I did is I ranked them from the worst to the best at the bottom. We are really pretty good at third down conversions. We are 33rd in the country. Kickoff returns, 37th in the country. Punt returns, 40th. Now, our special teams are doing pretty well. I wasn't sure they would. But they, matter of fact, I thought they were going to be a downgrade. And I think overall, they're an upgrade. Our coverage isn't that great. But our kids, our skill players, are they're getting yards. And they've gotten touchdowns, right? So that makes sense. Fourth down conversion, we're 52nd. Time of possession, 52nd. Now we're getting into the mid, you know, like we're average with everyone else. First downs offense. That means how effective we are getting yards on first down. We're 95th in the country, okay? Now, these are the ones that are in the red. And in all honesty, these are the very important ones. And this is where we're falling on our face this year. Passing offense, like I said, 118th out of 129. Total offense, 111th. Fewest penalty yards per game, 111th. 75.8 yards per game in penalties. Fourth down conversion, 110th. First down defenses, this is important. This is how well the other team does on their first downs. 110th. Fewest penalties per game, 107th. It's hard to believe that there's like 22 other teams that get more penalties than we do, but I guess that's true. Scoring offense, 105th. If you're above 100, folks, this is pretty crappy. Scoring offense, 105th, 22.4 points per game. Now, that means, let me drill down a little bit here. Right now, our scoring offense against D1 teams, the last four games, we're scoring less than 20 points per game. 19.7 points per game. That is as bad as it's been. I think I looked it up the other day, going back to like majors or something. It's bad. I'll look it up and write an article later on. It's terrible. Our total defense, 102nd, giving up 430 yards per game. Scoring defense, 97th, 32 points per game. Again, let me take that FCS team out of there and let's see what that does. Okay, so the last four games against D1 opponents, we are scoring 19.7. We are giving up 38.3 points per game. 38.3. That's worse than 2016. I mean, when our defense was terrible. Of course, we were scoring 41 points a game that year. It's a big cry from 19.7 points. We're scoring less than 20. We're giving up almost 40. There's the state of pit football for you in 2018. That's what Pat Narduzzi's given us. So anyway, I have that up there. You'll see it. I have a bunch of graphics up here for all of this. I'm not sure there's not too many more ways to say this. The state of pit football right now, I know, boy, there was 600 some comments on the game thread yesterday. And, you know, let's jump. First, we talked about the game itself. Now we're talking about the season. Let's talk about pit football. I think that pit fans don't really understand I'm not trying to sound snotty here. The importance that pit puts on the football program. It is not that big. It just, the bottom line is, it's not that big. They talk a big game, but it has always been in context to the rest of the university. Now, the argument is that you can have a great academic university and you can have a great football program, and that's very true. We see that. We see higher rated academic institutions than Pitt is that has much better football programs historically. And I'm talking modern day from World War II, you know, to now. But we are kidding ourselves, folks, if you think that this university is ever going to donate the time, the energy, not donate, but spend the time, the energy, and the money to make a concerted push to have championship football on a continual basis at Pitt. It is not going to happen. I will say that right out, flat out. It is not going to happen. This is not the animal the University of Pittsburgh is. Does that mean I like Pitt football any less? Yeah, no. I mean, I don't, because I understand this. I love Pitt football. I don't like to see him lose, but I love Pitt football. I like watching it. I like talking about it. I like writing about it. I like arguing about it. I like getting happy about it and being disgusted by it. This is what a fan is. But I also have a realistic idea. Now, I tell you, I've had a lot of conversations. I have a chance at least once a year, maybe once or twice a year, to talk with Nortenberg, the old chancellor, and some higher-ups at Pitt. That's by virtue of the way my family was and the people that I still know that are associated with the University of Pittsburgh. And, you know, we're all adults. I'm 62. They're in their 60s or 50s, and they're all, you know, they're in pretty strong positions there. So, you know, I understand that it's not Penn State. I mean, some people, I don't know why Pitt fans do it. They look and say, well, everyone hates Penn State. I don't hate Penn State. I got to be honest with you. I don't hate them. I don't really have anything to do with them. But, I mean, I hated them when the scandal was happening, obviously. But, you know, I don't get the hatred for them. But some people have it. But we're not going to be that kind of university. We're not going to be an Ohio State. I mean, maybe we could be a West Virginia. Isn't that sad? But see, I put this all in context. I take it for what it is. I am not going to get upset that we are not going to spend $10 million on a coach and, you know, build an on-campus stadium, which it'll never happen in our lifetimes, folks. Just get that out of your heads. Because it's just not that important to Pitt. Now, if you're the type of fan or the type of person that feels you have to have win at all cost and nothing should ever fall short of winning everything, then you're going to have a hard time with Pitt football. You better ratchet back expectations. And I don't mean just wins and losses, and I don't mean just this season. You better ratchet it back and take a step or two back and say, what exactly am I involved with here? Now, I'm not mean to be talking down to anybody. I really don't. But, I mean, some of the angst and anger that I read from fans during these games, it's over the top, man. It's like people are taking this way too personally. And, you know, I understand that. I understand you buy the gear. I understand you tailgate. I understand you get excited. Man, listen, if I didn't have a crap back, If I could actually walk as much as I could 2 years ago, I'd be at every tailgate too. I'd be at every game. I used to go to every game. I'd drive up all the time. I'd go to the away games. I mean, you know, I'd drive 4.5 hours, you know, every, you know, 9 hours round trip to get to the games because I wanted to be part of Pitt football. I have a blog because I want to be part of Pitt football. I'm not a part of it exactly, but I want to be involved with the fans and everything else. But I have to look at it in with a critical eye. I use that word a lot, critical. Because if you don't do that, you're going to kill yourself. And you're going to be very, very disappointed all the time. Now, on the other hand, if you're one of the guys, and we have a couple of them, and maybe I'm one, a lot of people think I'm just always super negative. If you're always looking at Pitt football and criticizing every little aspect of it and all the players personally criticizing them, then why? Then why do you follow it? It obviously is way too personal for you. All right, you know, I didn't really want to get into all that, but it's going to get worse before it gets better, guys. It is. So you just buckle that seatbelt up for a rocky road. And here's something that gets me. Before the preseason, I watched Paul Zeiss being interviewed. And he was flat out asked, what do you think about the team's chances this year? And he said he thought the team would win 8 or 9 games. And then he said, but I don't think this is the year that's going to be the big year. I think it's going to be 2019. That's going to be the year where things all come together under Pat Narduzzi. And I sat back and I said, holy hell. If that's not a homer, I don't know what is. Because all I can see it going the other way. And this is, I'm talking about like June or July that I heard him say this. And I'm thinking, like, he's pretty close to the program. He has a kid that's there. He talks to everyone all the time. What do they know that I don't? And it turns out nothing. It is what it is. And, you know, I harp on this a lot, and you guys think I take it very personally, but I really don't. But this is a huge mistake on Pat Narduzzi's part, is to have those practices closed. Because this is what happens. You force feed the fans, and I think the administration and everyone else, you force feed them bullcrap about how great the team's going to be and how great these players are playing. And then as soon as it turns out not to be true, even in a minor way, they turn on you. Fans turn on you. Because you told us it was going to be great, Pat. You told us Kenny Pickett was going to be the star of the team. But you know what? If we would have been able to have guys write about the team the way it was, and I'm telling you, when he refused to release those statistics from those scrimmages, I wrote an article about it. I turned to my wife and I said, oh, holy hell, this is it. He has no confidence in our offense at all this year. And this is exactly what's happened. He's dug this hole. He's dug it. Pat Narduzzi has. Don't blame anyone else. Don't blame the University of Pittsburgh's administration. You know, don't blame Heather Like. Although that, you know, I agree with people that extension was stupid. It was just plain stupid. It was a bad business deal and a bad role model thing for other people to see happen. He rewarded mediocrity. But really, this falls on Pat Narduzzi's shoulders in a million different ways. It's who he recruits, it's who he hires, it's his personality, it's his paranoia, it's his everyone's out to get me and the team, it's us versus them battlements. You know, lock the gates. What the hell does that mean? Lock the gates. It means lock everyone out from the football program. That's what it means. This is his attitude. And when you have an attitude like that, what the hell do you think is going to happen? As soon as you have adversity, it gets worse. It doesn't get better. And we saw that. We saw that as soon as the second half of the Albany game. When they couldn't score against Albany in the second half of that game, all but the really super diehard Pitt fans said, there's a red flag right there, folks. He's not getting it done. He's not getting it done. And he never will. I'm sorry to say it. We're not going to see a difference in this program until he's gone. And it should be sooner than later. I give people 4 years. I've never advocated for firing him. I certainly didn't think you should have been fired after last year. You don't fire a guy in midseason. You should have fired Conklin last year in midseason. But, you know, if we have 3 or 4 wins like we might, it's a certain trend that we're seeing. It's not going to get any better. 2019 is going to be horrid compared to this. 15 starters leaving and you have no talent behind them. All right, there's my downer for the day for you guys. Sorry about that. We play Syracuse. I don't think it's going to get much better. It's not going to be a blowout, 45-14. I think we'll lose. Dungy's a good quarterback. Good quarterbacks play well against us. Notre Dame's going to kick our ass. And then we're going to be 2-5 with 5 games left. 2-5 with 5 games left. If you think we're going to win 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 5, good for you. I think we might win 2 out of 5. Anyway, that's the way I see it. Guys, thanks again for listening. I'm going to leave all this information up on the blog article so that you have a chance to look at it. And maybe things will be different. You know, we're going to play some good games. We're going to play some tighter games. Maybe Syracuse. But I don't know. I think the team's getting beaten down. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.